I don't wanna go to work. I just wanna chill and play all day. Look him dead in the face and say, I wish I could just be still asleep while you work.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Jobs Blow podcast with Brianna and Josh.
The podcast for dreamers with and without day jobs.
Hey, we're so glad to be back after a year, and we're looking forward to sharing more inspiring stories as well as perspectives on surviving life in, during, throughout, past, present of a pandemic.
Yes, Josh. And since everything is still upside down, talking about pursuing a dream job feels even more aspirational than it did before. So we are going to pivot, and instead we're going to focus on the reality of what we're living in. So before we jump in, Josh, what's going on with you?
Oh, you know, Gustav, I actually had an interesting thing happen today. I was with my son, and it was like lunch. I was picking him up from somewhere, my in-laws, and I was like, oh, let's go get some pizza. And it's the first time I walked into a store with him, right? Like during this whole entire experience, you know? And how weird is that? Like, it was just like, I was like, should I go in? What do I do? Like, do I order it and have it brought out? And I like went in the store, and it was like really just like surreal. Like, people were in there and eating, and I've been in stores before with a mask and had to, you know, go in and get out. But it was just like, I was like hyper aware of everything and keeping him away from people. Like, this is the new reality, you know. I don't know how long this is going to last. I'm trying to be cool about it, but also safe. But that's like the first time in a year I walked into a building with one of my kids like that. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I still, when I watch TV shows or movies where people are socializing and hugging, I get like, what is happening? Like, right. I really think it's going to be really hard to go back. And I, in a lot of ways, I'm okay with some of it.
Right.
All that fake PR hugging and kissing, if I can.
Yes. Oh,
and
my God.
I don't need to do that. So.
Right. I just think it's interesting how, like, you know, I think it's important, not to get into a whole discussion about it, but like wearing masks and being safe. But I do think it's interesting, even from a PR standpoint, of like public displays of when people are wearing masks and not, like sports teams, you know, like everybody's on the field. Nobody's wearing a mask. They're spitting at each other. They're face to face. But like, you go back to the sideline and then you have to wear a mask. I don't understand how that works.
Well, in Texas, you know? it's a free for all again.
Well, now so, it is. Yeah.
Right. Everything's.
Who else? Mississippi too. They went back, right?
Yeah.
100%. So
yeah,
I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Well,
How are you?
I'm good. And I'm super excited for the show today.
Okay.
Because I get to prove that I was let go from a job and I was actually a really good employee.
Was our former sponsor.
Yes. Well, Michelle, you want to say it with the French accent?
Michelle et Augustine.
And I'll do the American Michelle and Augustine.
Michelle and Augustine. Do it with the Ohio accent. Do it with the Ohio accent.
No, I worked too hard to get rid of that. That's Michelle and Augustine is all I'm giving you. So today's show is When the Cookie Crumbles, which the title is purely not because their cookies are crumbling, but because my cookie crumbled. Because it was a job that I really enjoyed. I loved the people that I was working with, and I'm glad to be, as I mentioned, working with again on a project. But today's guest is Evan Hollid, who was the CEO while I was there.
Right.
He's with us today to talk about looking for a job in COVID and being stuck at home with his wife and two children for the last year.
And looking for a job, it sounds like you may have given away some of the ending of that story.
Well, I may have mentioned previously that I was let go along with the CEO to make me look even better. So the audience, if they listen regularly, they should know that. So anyway, welcome, Evan. Thank you for being on our show today.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
Evan, you're the best for being on to come and talk about this. It is time for you to spill the cookies. Oh, I did it.
Spill the cookies. We don't even know what that means.
No, you spill the cookies?
No. They crumble.
Spill the beans.
God damn it.
Or the tea, which I've worked on tea too.
Spill the cookies.
All right, Evan, it's been a year of this, all right? I haven't had an actual audience of live people besides my children.
Anyway, Evan, thank you for joining us. And As I mentioned, we worked together for less than a year.
A little less than a year. It felt like 5 years.
Yeah, okay, great.
Because in a good way.
Loved it. Okay, there you go. Nice save, nice save. So one thing I have to say about working with Evan that I loved about the way he ran the office is that we all made the effort to sit together when it was lunchtime, and I really felt like it went a long way for the team morale, because I have certainly worked in offices where morale is not good. So I don't know, Evan, talk a little bit about.
Trust me, that was not my idea. All right, I come from the same place you do. I haven't eaten lunch with people while I'm at work in ever. And so this idea of sitting together, this idea of sharing food like this, it's so French. And it was so ingrained in the culture that I wanted to come in and stop it. I wanted to come in and say, guys, we don't have to eat together anymore. I want to eat at my desk. I don't want to eat with any of you. Same thing for breakfast. But it would have killed them. It would have crushed them. And it's nice, I think, to keep some of those cultural relics too. I mean, the French do some things better than we do. I think the way they celebrate food, the way they spend time together and socialize, the way they even think about work is a lot smarter than the way we do it.
Well, I enjoyed it. I guess I do vaguely remember that you sometimes stayed at your desk while we were all at the picnic table. But anyway, so obviously we're here, we're unemployed.
And, we are.
Do you want to just talk a little bit about how we ended up in this situation?
How did we end up in this situation?
COVID.
Well, COVID, yes, but I think it's going to end up being me, unfortunately, to a certain degree, which is so obviously Michelle and Augustin. I'm going to use the Americanized version, or Mike and Augie, as I would have liked for them to allow.
Sounds great. Either way,
it was a really good idea. Another one of my ideas that didn't go anywhere. And so Michelle and Augustin, we were a cookie company, basically focused on trying to establish ourselves in the U.S., trying to hit a retail audience, so people go to grocery stores, things like that. We had a small business that was really centered, though, on food service and travel and leisure. And so, not to get too technical or anything, but when the pandemic hit, food service, which is office buildings, and cafeterias and things like that, and travel and leisure like Delta Airlines and the stores in the airports, they stopped ordering, and I don't think they've started ordering again. What's funny though is that what ended up kind of not dooming us, because the brand is out there. They're nationwide in right. Whole Foods. They're having a lot of success. They got great products. The team that they left in place is super. I don't want to make it sound like
their cookie's crumbling.
Yeah, their cookie has not crumbled. But the reality was that it wasn't really COVID that killed me, at least. It exacerbated all of the problems and mistakes that I had been able to skate through before. I didn't understand how to manage inventory. I had been part of companies with gigantic forecasts, Coca-Cola and Smartwater and, candy companies like Tops. And forecasting is a science. Like you know exactly what you have to order, how to get it over here, all that stuff.
Right.
We were working for this small company. We had to make guesses about how much product we wanted to bring in at a time. It came in over on a boat too. It was expensive. It was time consuming. And so I wasn't good at that to begin with. And so a complete shock to the system where nobody's ordering anymore and things slow down like that, it just made it worse. It wasn't necessarily that we couldn't have survived it, because they did, but I couldn't survive it, frankly, because it proved to me the things that I also couldn't do well and the things where I wasn't adding value, which is a sad thing to realize.
Did it have the cookies have a certain amount of time that they could be in your warehouse before they had to be sold?
They have a certain amount of shelf life at the retail store. So when you buy them on the shelf, then the people who distribute them have their own timelines and when they'll keep product until. And so, I mean, you end up having product that's two, three, 4 months away from expiring that nobody will take.
Right. And it was all produced overseas. So it was originally
produced overseas.
A French company, and then they were trying to expand here.
Exactly. And okay. So, you know, we were taking a product from over there, then we were bringing it over here, adding cost to it by, you know, doing some of the repacking and stuff that we were doing to
a delicious product.
Right. A wonderful product.
Really was. We gave it out to people. People loved it. And I had a whole stash here that we were going through during the early
stages. If I had two packs of them in front of me, I'd eat two packs right now. I find them, I don't think they're supposed to be bite-sized. That's not really the French way, but from an American standpoint, they're like bite-sized cookie treats.
Right.
So what was I talking about?
So about, you were just basically talking about as the CEO.
It wasn't just COVID.
It was exacerbating certain things that you were hoping that you just never really focused on as much.
I mean, listen, our business, you know, business was impacted. It was pretty bad. But at the same time, the environment then that we found ourselves in, kind of all distanced, all like, you know, completely, you know, away from each other, you know, no human connection anymore. You know, I'm a bad manager. Like, I don't know how to describe that. Like, people have enjoyed me as a manager, I think, as a person, and enjoy the fact that I think I have empathy and I think that I care. And I do care about.
And you're macro, not micro.
Yes, and I'm very macro. I'm very hands off. That's the way I've always been. But managing, the actual idea of having a process in place and, you know, knowing exactly what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, knowing what the people who are on your team should be doing and when they should be doing it, I can't. I'm not organized. I'm an absolute mess. I mean, I'm a mess in my personal life from an organization standpoint. I'm a mess professionally when it comes to that stuff. That's just not how my brain works.
So how is it for you then when you were home, and I'm sure we'll get back to this too from like a CEO's perspective of managing the early stages of the COVID, but how did that affect you managing from home then?
I basically wasn't. I mean, I'm thrilled that Brianna has positive feelings about the end. Even
I knew stuff was going down. I was just trying to be positive.
Yeah, but I mean, it was pretty quickly after it started that you know, I think once you realized there it wasn't going to end, that it was an actual, this was a long term problem that was going to have serious consequences. I think my brain broke. To a certain degree, it just became. It's very difficult to teach yourself a new set of tricks. It's very difficult to learn a new skill when everything seems like it's in crisis. I tried the challenge and it didn't go great.
Well, the one thing I have to say, Evan, about you, especially as a former CEO, I doubt many CEOs would publicly say I wasn't good at this or own any faults in regards to their job. Certainly no one I've ever worked with before have ever admitted that they did anything wrong.
Right.
So
well, that's what I want to know.
It's an admirable quality.
It is. And what I want to know what the other admirable qualities are. Like, what are you proud of that you did there? Why do you think they brought
hired
you on
me.
In the first place?
Yeah,
you
know, hiring Brianna.
You know, you're a young guy.
Communications department.
You don't look French. So like, you know, like.
Listen, I'm proud that we accomplished our mission. I mean, I joined the company, you know, 3 years ago. 3.5 years ago at this point, you know, I had left Atlanta as just kind of a brand manager, brand director. You know,
Coca-Cola.
I didn't have at Coca-Cola, working on the Coca-Cola brand, the flagship. Love my Coke.
Pepsi.
I forgot you're a Pepsi alum. So I forgot what I was talking about now.
No,
what you did, what you were proud of.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we took a brand that was unknown here in the US that frankly didn't have its shit together in terms of you know, how to operate here. Great products, great people, you know, just a terrific infrastructure, but didn't really understand the market here. And so we had to change a lot of things. You know, I came in thinking that we were going to, it would be 3-6 months, we'd have, you know, a whole new supply chain figured out, or we're going to build a factory. You know, I don't know. I know about building a factory. You know, we were going to do all these incredible things. And it turns out that it's really, really difficult to get those done. We ended up having to start at the beginning, had to hire a team, had to, you know, redo the branding, the packaging, all that stuff. But in the end, we got national distribution at Whole Foods Market. Right. The probably the premier place for young brands, especially brands that are, you know, either indulgent or in that health and wellness space. You know, that is the perfect spot to be. It's the dream. Right. And I didn't get to see it.
That's the saddest part of the story.
I sold it in Texas with our great partner, our VP of sales, Danielle. I sold it with her in Austin. I came back. We planned for it for months.
You go into, like, you actually go into, like, a Whole Foods, like, office.
Their office,
like,
yeah.
Here's the deal.
You pitch it. Wow. First, they send out, in this particular case, they send out an RFP, you know, a request for proposal, but I guess it's really a request for submission. And we responded to it. We said, all right, let's go. Let's try to get, you know, into this. Right. We put together your case, you know, why, you know, they give you a little brief where they basically say something like, this is what we're looking for. This is the situation that we find ourselves in our stores or with our collection. Right. And then you pitch for it and you basically say, why are my products better? What are we going to give you that we won't give anybody else or that no one else can give you? You know, you want to come to France, you know, want to, you know, have dinner on top of the Eiffel Tower, which you can't do, by the way. You can, I think, eat on top of the Eiffel Tower, but you can't offer people trips and bribes to get them to carry.
You can bring your own, bring a sandwich and meet up.
The cookies spoke for themselves.
Exactly. But so yeah, we went down there, we pitched that thing, they took it, and basically, just a few days before distribution was supposed to start, before we would have seen it on shelf, I said goodbye to the team. And seeing it for the first time on shelf in our Whole Foods in Gowanus was
You cried.
Oddly emotional. I won't say that I cried. Or not at least a heaving cry, you know. But it was definitely it was difficult. It was hard to see, and it's hard sometimes because, you know, you want people to be successful when you leave. You respect them, you like them, but at the same time, you kind of also want everything to fall apart when you leave.
That's so true. When you get laid off or you leave,
We talk a lot about how February of last year, how different our life was, like our perspective. Granted, we knew that there was something. I remember talking to you, Evan, about whatever this COVID thing was. But, you know, we were riding on this wave of we're going to be in Whole Foods. This brand is finally going to get, like, the awareness and the attention. It's going to be in the right place where its target shoppers are. And then COVID hit.
Brianna, we were preparing for the largest trade show in our industry, which is Natural Products Expo West. So Expo West for short. We had built an entire new trade booth, spent a ton of money on it. We had shipped everything over there. I'm not sure if you remember, but I was blue.
Yeah, your hair was blue.
So I dyed
Why
my...
Why were you blue?
So when we redid our branding, the Michelle and Augustin characters became personified on the pack, and we gave them blue hair. Some of our French team was very literal in asking us, why do they have blue hair? But it was just to stand out, try to get some attention. So the previous year, I had dyed my hair dark blue, permanent. So went to salon, master colorist from L'Oreal. if you're going to do this, you do it right. I had my head bleached as well as my face. So I had a full beard too. And I dyed them both blue. And so I got a good reaction. People recognized me. People have talked to me about it ever since. So I was going to do it again.
And you were committed because that was the first week of March, wasn't it?
The last time I had done it right before my flight to California, and I had been dripping hair dye on like Rudy Giuliani.
You were like Giuliani, I was just going to say. Like,
on the back of my seat on a Delta flight. And then, you know, the pillows, you know, in my hotel, they looked like I murdered a Smurf. You know, they were just, there was blue everywhere. So I was smart this time. I did it a couple days earlier so that I could, you know, treat it. I could wash out the excess. I'd be, you know, perfectly ready to go. And if I hadn't done that, if I had just been as typically disorganized and typically, you know, spontaneous as I am, I would have survived. And I had that blue hair for the first 5 months.
Oh yeah, no, we watched his hair fade out over the next like 4 months on video.
From blue to green to
But Evan, you were committed in the sense that we were like the last brand to pull out of the expo, and it was like in March, wasn't it? Like the first week of March.
We were supposed to leave a couple days. When we made the decision, it was only like a day or two before we were supposed to leave. And tons of brands had backed out. It seemed that the direction it was going in was fairly clear. But like I said, we had put so much effort into preparing for it. It was such a big stage. It wasn't even the team wanted to do it. You know, it wasn't just, you know, I'm the boss, so I'm going to push to say this is an important thing that we need to do. Screw the pandemic, you know, I guess at that point it wasn't a pandemic. But the team wanted to do it. They had put hard work into it.
Well,
they
I was to, glad to not well, have been scheduled for that trip. I'm not going to lie. I was like, good luck.
Evan, what was the goal for that? And also speak to a little bit, you know, as great as Whole Foods was, and that's like a huge accomplishment. So congrats on that. But what was the next ultimate goal in general for you, you know, having accomplished that, getting into Whole Foods? Like, what was the next stage? But then specifically with that event, what were you hoping for that you guys were so excited about?
I mean, you're basically brands like Michelle and Augustin, you know, young brands, especially in the food and beverage space, you go through different stages.
Right.
So we had gone through our early stages of people just knowing who we are, distributors carrying us, you know, taking our calls. We were trying to move up to that second level of, you know, national distribution, meeting the bigger players, you know, introducing our products to a wider range than we would have ever before. We were introducing a new product. We had invented a new recipe, a product called croissant chips, the first French chip. Which we could spend another hour talking about that, but we were going to make a splash. We were going to use this as a springboard to jump up to the next level. You know, most of our marketing budget ends up going into these types of events.
Right.
So to lose it was just, it was awful. It was so disappointing. And really, I think put a halt to, you know, a lot of positive momentum.
Right.
A lot of positive feelings. So
yeah, it just became a slippery slope after that. So,
I mean, if you just quick fire answer, what would have been the next thing besides Whole Foods that you would have wanted?
We were going to be a nationwide. We were going to be the first French brand to actually really be successful in the U.S.
Got it.
There had never been one. Every French brand that had been here before, like, was niche, like an Avion, or, you know, even Danone had to change their name to Danone when they came here. Like,
to appeal to people in Ohio. Danone.
Yeah.
Danone.
Yeah.
Really?
So no French company had ever achieved the, you know, that sort of level of mainstream success beyond just specialty, you know, or super premium. And I thought we were going to get there, and I still do believe they will. And I think the chip is a huge step in that direction. What's more democratic with a small D than a chip? You know, what's more mainstream? There's nothing more mainstream than chips.
So it really illustrates then how much more impactful it was, not just for the brand, for everyone working there. You guys had this home run with the Whole Foods. I mean, it was a first swing pitch home run, and you were like on your way. I feel bad, you know.
Ooh. Brianna, you lived it from the mindset of having to try to pitch the PR
and promote it, right?
Preparing for promoting this big accomplishment for us, which, you know, again, you know, trade pubs and all that stuff, but people would care. It was important to us. And then to see that fall apart, you know, it's just, we couldn't get a story anywhere. No one was going to cover us being in Whole
no.
Foods. Well, something the industry was about to collapse.
Right. Well, and the other thing too about working in that office is we were all very passionate about the product. I mean, Evan, you've worked and I've worked for brands that, I mean, really, are you necessarily that passionate about it? I mean, right. I've worked on sweetened condensed milk. I didn't even know what it was.
So maybe I've been fortunate enough then to have fallen in love with every brand that I've worked on. I mean, I my first was Ring Pops, and I don't, you know, at the Tops Candy Company, you know, how do you not fall in love with a Ring Pop? We used to wear them into the boardroom, you know, for meetings with, you know, senior executives and stuff. You'd have a Ring Pop on your finger. I worked on Smartwater, which is an amazing brand I have strong feelings for still. I still think about it. I remember my first child was born when I had that job, and I remember putting a Smartwater bottle into her crib so that we had something to measure her against to see how big she actually was. And then, you know, Coca-Cola, I mean, I've been lucky. So, right. You know, to be sitting here right now with nothing to do working on no brands is just, ugh.
And is this the first time this has ever been the case in your life that you've been in this kind of limbo situation?
Yeah, it's the first time not completely of my doing. I'll say it that way. I've left jobs before. I've left a career. I used to be a sales trader, like a clerk on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And I was worked for Merrill Lynch at first. I worked for an independent broker after that. And I left that business and I was unemployed for a while. And I took a big step down. I started, when I was at Tops, I started as an assistant brand manager. You know, I had been making, you know, high six figures trading on Wall Street. You know, and all of a sudden now I'm an entry level with a 24-year-old kid. I'm 31. I'm, you know, just got married, and everything everything was starting over. So, you know, I've done it before, but involuntarily.
Mm. Well, it says a lot about who you are that at 31 you could put yourself in that situation and start over.
Well, if you were as bad at your job as I was at my job when I worked on the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, I couldn't catch a cold to use like an old man, like old dad joke. No matter what direction I pointed in, it was wrong down there. So it was awful.
Well, if the key is to be bad at jobs to still have the level of success you've had, then I will continue to push at being terrible at jobs, so I can follow in your footsteps.
good luck with that.
So, Evan, now that we're talking about being in this space, how has the job search been for you? And a little, like we were talking before, coming from a CEO position, I know I struggle just being at an executive position because the jobs get less and less the higher you go up. So what do you do when you've essentially reached the top?
Well, and I appreciate you putting it that way because it's very nice. But you just have to move on. You have to just try to. I don't know.
No, but are you looking for?
There was a long period of time where I didn't know what I wanted to do after leaving that. I was fairly worn out from the process of trying to manage through COVID, which I already told you I sucked at, and was just emotionally and physically draining. I didn't want to look for anything for a while. Luckily I didn't have to for, you know, great reasons we don't have to talk about, but you know, I had a little buffer. But once it became time to start looking again in earnest, like there's nothing there. I mean, I found very quickly that I was confronted with either no jobs being available or jobs being available completely with brands or in industries that I didn't know anything about. So totally, you know, everything was technology, everything direct to consumer, this and that, you know, e-commerce. I don't know anything about that. I mean, I do, I'm not 100 years old, but I mean, I grew up, you know, and it came up at a different time. So, you know, I can't do search engine management and, you know, buy Facebook ads and things like that. So, you know, it almost felt like after 6 months, like the world had actually like turned a page and like passed me by for a while, which was difficult.
So what are you, where are you looking? What is your dream job right now? Any job? Are you just want to get hired, or is there something specific?
I really love what we did launching a brand and introducing a brand to, you know, a community. You know, in this case, it was a lot of French Americans, a lot of Francophiles. But we introduced something to these people they didn't know before. I've worked on big brands where, you know, you're just trying to help steer the ship. I really like having that hands-on experience. I really want to build something again. But there's a lot of risk with that. And, you know, there's a lot of folks like me who, you know, may have been decent at their jobs or would have potentially gotten better at their jobs given some more time. And we're all hunting for the same roles. And so, you know, I mean, I talked to a bunch of folks who are, you know, similar levels, similar, you know, times in their career, and we are getting the same roles. We're interviewing for the same things. We're competing against each other. And these are people that I know. So imagine how many more people there are than that are actually going after these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, see, that's something that I've been, you know, feeling and hearing conflicting things about. You know, everyone's like, all right, so the job market's all over the place. The numbers are hard to pin on why the numbers are what they are. But some people are like, oh, there's so much opportunity right now. And I'm like, you know, I've been all over. It's been a rough year. I've applied for a lot of different jobs, and I feel the opposite.
Yeah.
I feel kind of like you do. Like, I can't get a lick. And I'm changing things and rewriting resume. I'm submitting your resume with my name on it. I can't get a fucking lick.
Well, it's interesting how quickly the skills required to work can change. And, you know, I kind of thinking about it, it's weird. You think about, you know, time passing you by because the car was invented, you know, and the horse and buggy went away, or, you know, my grandparents when the telephone was invented. You know, these are big technological changes. They're shifts in how people work and what they can do. You know, this was only a couple months. And within a couple months, everything had changed. Everything had moved to, you know, what they're now calling performance marketing, which is basically how do we hire, you know, young people who can think tactically, who can execute in a digital world. And people like me we're expensive. We're just...
Right. Well, what, like, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, so for you then, does it, and I think what interests me so much about this whole conversation is you've been... the top, not, you know what I mean? Like, we're usually the people get laid off here and there, and you have this perspective from above. You know, do you think about doing some of the dreamer type stuff, as in starting your own business, or what can I do from home with the skill set that I have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to take the opportunities as they come, and you know, one thing when you're not working, lots of people come to you and want you to work on new businesses because they don't pay. And so, you know, those calls just keep coming. Right. So I've had the chance to go out of my comfort zone a little bit, to you know, become an advisor in some types of companies and projects that I probably wouldn't have gotten to see before. So I'm learning stuff. I'm doing things. I'm trying to chase that. But there's a reality. And at some point you need to work, you need a paycheck.
Right.
And that's different for different people, but you know, we're getting there.
Right.
So Evan, we had a guest last night who, she and her husband and their daughter were living in New Jersey. She was commuting into the city. Then COVID hit, and her husband was a photographer who had a studio, and they just decided to sell their house, pack everything up in storage, and hit the road.
Good for them.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, do you ever see yourself doing something like that? Or, I mean, I couldn't. I wish
we're
I could.
We're too practical. Yeah, I mean, we're too practical. We're too, you know, New York Jew. Like, you know, I'm not, not running off to go whitewater rafting or, you know, walk the Appalachian Trail.
But you would move for a job, you said.
I have moved for plenty of jobs. And it's, you know, it's funny. We've actually lived in, I think my wife and I decided the other day, we'd lived in 8 different places since we got married less than, you know, almost 15 years ago. So we move around a lot. And actually, my experience coming out of this, I don't want to move anymore. I want to move one last time. I need to find a community. I need to find a place with a yard. I need to find a place where, you know, people are easier to deal with than here in Brooklyn.
I'll be honest. I'm I'm always been a city guy since I moved to the city after college. I like never wanted to leave, but this past year is we're looking at houses and looking at situations, new communities, new friends and work opportunities. I totally feel that, you know, yeah. Like a patch, I'll take 6x6 in the backyard of green grass, you know, as a difference than being, I mean, we've been okay in here, but like just simply going outside was a challenge. So I totally feel you on that. One last move. That's it.
That's it. And
then death. Are you talking about like
death?
Yeah. No, like maybe like a couple.
I'm talking about death right after that.
I'm thinking that maybe I could squeeze in a few good years before death. But I mean, like I haven't had a doctor since I was a child. Like, you know, I've moved around so much and, you know, never bothered settling in anywhere that like, I don't have a doctor. Like I want to have a doctor that I can call and be like, oh, so-and-so, who's your general practitioner? You go, oh, Dr. Jones. Like, you right. know, and I want some of those things that come, those things that come with settling down because I'm tired of introducing myself to doctors.
Honestly, the best answer ever. Everyone has, I've never heard an answer like that. That's great.
You were in, how long were you in Atlanta?
We were in Atlanta for 5 years.
I mean, that's,
you we were in Westchester.
That's two checkups if you're a guy, 5 years.
Yep. We were in Westchester before that. We were in Queens before that. We were in Manhattan before that. I mean, so again, some of these moves aren't like, you know, moving from Queens to Brooklyn isn't the world's biggest move.
Still,
it's a lot.
Well, my biggest move in 25 years has been from Manhattan to Queens. That's like,
and you didn't even go that far. Let's be honest.
I did
from Manhattan to Long Island City, which is basically 2.0.
Yeah, that's it. No. Yeah. All right, Evan. So, do you have any advice for people?
I was dreading if you were going to ask me if
any advice for people like Josh and I who don't have jobs either.
Be cynical if you have to. I love it.
No, I mean, it's hard to give advice to people when you feel like you're not doing a good job yourself, you know, and you know, this has been a difficult experience. Again, just for those reasons, I'm just not built for this. So, you know, for me to advise someone, I just say, take care of yourself. Like, I think yeah. that it's very easy, and it was very easy at the beginning to just completely lose everything. You know, staying up late, never getting dressed. There were days where I didn't shower. There were multiple days in a row where I didn't shower. You know, you stop, you know, doing the things that you love. You stop having any joy. And once you do that, it's just a spiral.
Right.
Yeah.
It spirals out of control. And I wish that I had taken better care of myself at the beginning.
There's this, I forget his name now, the general that goes around and gives the speeches and motivational speeches. And he spoke out a little bit against Trump, but he's really like a former military guy. But he gave one of these speeches kind of similar to that. And one of the things he said in that regard was wake up every day and make your bed. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I do that anyway, but it really just made so much sense. Like,
at least yes, you'll have accomplished one thing.
Exactly. And then you can go on to the next thing.
Yeah, no. And that's really important, especially if you're not prepared for this, if you're not organized, if this isn't your type of thing, like actually getting something done is a really good feeling.
It is. But I've gone through phases throughout this year. Like I had a phase where I was doing yoga and I was like really feeling good. And I had the phase where I was drinking every night.
Yep. We bought a SoulCycle bicycle. We had a period and I barely could ride a regular bicycle. I've never been to a spin class in my life. We bought a SoulCycle bike, had it installed during the pandemic. I rode it religiously for 3 months at least, and I haven't touched it in the last 7. I mean, so it's,
but it hangs closed really nicely though.
I mean, it's in a beautiful bay window too, like they are in the Peloton ads, you know, because I only bike when people outside could see me walking
so
by.
They know people, you need know? To know
people
that
need
you're
to
working.
Know I want them to see me when they're strolling with their lattes and their baguettes. I want them to see me sweating my ass off on a Peloton bike. Yeah.
So, Evan, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
It's the worst question ever, but also mandatory for this.
I'll be honest. I have no idea where I'm going to be in 5 years.
Alive.
I plan to be alive. I plan to be employed.
Have a doctor.
I plan to have a doctor. I plan to have a home. You know, I'd just like to be in a more settled place in 5 years. I think that, you know, professionally, personally, there's been so much uncertainty over the course of the last, you know, 12 months, you know, and then if you had any leading into this, I mean, shit, then that's a double whammy. But, you know, I would look for some stability. And frankly, I want to find the next company, the next job, the next product, whatever it is. I want to work on it until I die. I want to die in my home, which I will have lived in for 50 years or so. So I'm about 91 in this. And then I'm ready to go.
Do you think that can happen in the tri-state area? Or do you think you're going to have to move away?
Unfortunately, like sometimes life meets reality. Like you want to have a humbling experience. Call a mortgage broker when you don't have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's no positive spin they can put on it at all. I mean, there's no like, well, you know, it's rough. So right. I don't know if it's possible.
Well, can you give us not so much like a, you know, message, but like just a perspective, you know, in someone in your position, because a lot of people are in our position, you know, laid off or, you know, kind of looking around. How do you feel about, what do you advise as far as like going back to brands or companies that maybe you worked for in the past or, you know, that kind of in light of all this, how do you position yourself when pitching yourself? You know, what is it that you're, you know, you obviously realize certain things that you were better at and certain things you weren't as good at. How do you then, or how do we position ourselves to get that next job after something?
Well, listen, I'm brutal on myself, and I'm also, I try to be as honest as possible with people. I think that admitting, you know, what you've done wrong, talking about how you've learned from it, those types of things. I mean, that's my entire spiel now. Okay. Is, you know, why do I want to do this again? Well, because I screwed up for so long. There were so many parts of it that I wasn't good at, or that I didn't know how to prioritize, or that, you know, I just wasn't prepared for. And now I think I know what I would want to do if presented with it again. But unfortunately, now there's nowhere to do it.
Right.
I love that honesty. It's just so funny because anybody that would be like training you to interview would be like, absolutely don't say that.
Yeah.
Right.
No, but you have to.
No, but I'm the same way. I'm honest to the core, and anyone would be like, you're doing it wrong. You need to. I mean, I interviewed plenty of people who came in and told me, I could tell they were lying. Like, I know you didn't do that, but that's, people are told to sell. Sell yourself.
Listen, if you can't, if the company doesn't want the real you, like if they can't buy into what you're all about and you're, you know, you like to plain talk or whatever it is, if they can't buy that, then don't work there. I mean, I've gone into job interviews where, you know, everything's gone great and they just tell me afterwards, they're just like, culturally, this is not a good fit. Like, you do not belong here. Like, we smile, like we don't criticize we don't give constructive feedback, you know, we don't, and so it doesn't work everywhere. You have to find a place where it makes sense.
So maybe I should go back to my references and be like, listen, if anybody calls you about me, tell them the honest truth.
Yeah.
Don't just say the good stuff.
Well, listen,
say he can be an asshole sometimes.
You have to at least be able to position it though as how you've made it better. Like, I don't just sit there and like list my flaws.
Right. You know, right.
You know, well, I have a hard time controlling my appetite, and you know, I only
exercise if it's in a
window. Yeah, I'm disorganized. I mean, you're trying to tell a story with it as to, you know, how you would engage in a situation differently, why you would be better prepared this time.
Yes, I see that.
How could you be worse prepared?
Fun fact, Josh, Evan didn't even look at my resume when he hired me. He got a reference from somebody and then he just...
See, that's what that's what the world should be doing. This resume thing, to me, the resume is the lie. To me, the resume is like, why can't I should write 4 job titles and like, what's great about me? That's it.
All these fucking lies. Now you're going to get angry letters from Big Resume. and
good fuck them. You know, I don't get it. You know why? I've paid for those things and I've had professionals and I've had HR people look at them and everybody's moving this and putting this here and core values, this and that. And it doesn't fucking make a difference.
Well, I'll let you know if my $2,000 investment pays off.
Jesus, Brianna, $2,000? I would have looked at your resume. Okay, for like
I paid to get mine fixed up. I paid like $200.
Yeah, it's insane. Oh, yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
Where are you going to publish it online? I'm gonna just get your money's worth.
Can I tell you? I mean, look, I'm just going to say, I know people who are in the HR business who have lied on their resume.
Everybody does.
Blatantly. And I have always been told by her, you don't lie. You can't lie. If you lie, and I'm thinking my whole time, I don't want to, you know, but like you lie on it. You blatantly lie on it. And I'm like, should I just be doing that? I can't believe that. Like, I've always been like the honest, you know, this whole honest thing we're talking about. But like now I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to put like CEO of Michelle and Augustine.
Go for it. Put my number down. They can call me as a reference.
It doesn't carry a lot of weight.
To be honest, Evan, if I shaved and lost a few pounds, we might kind of look alike. I'm just saying, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I also have a full head of hair as well. Well,
you can't see the with the background here. So,
all right, Evan. What's going on back here. So, one of the things we do before we close out the show is since COVID has taken people's sense of taste and smell, we've been talking about the last year, other senses that you feel you've lost or gained. So first, what other, like, what sense do you feel like you lost or other senses that you feel you've lost?
I've definitely lost my fashion sense. I have not worn anything other than black t-shirts and black stretchy pants for a long time. I didn't even own a pair of black stretchy pants when the pandemic started. I only wore jeans everywhere. And so, I mean, I look decked out in my whole, like, head to toe, you know, matching. My fashion sense sucks. My sense of humor has gotten worse. Maybe it's just because I've gotten older too, and I've been, you know, spending more time talking to kids, but I've become my dad, it's become obvious to me that I'm a dad joke guy now, and I have a dad sense of humor.
As opposed to what before? Were you like cutting edge with the comedy?
I was a cutting edge prop comic in my old days. Listen, I worked on the New York Stock Exchange. I had a very dirty mouth. I've come from an environment where, you know, I think that being straight and clear with people, like we've said, is the right way regardless. So when the only people you have to talk to are your kids,
yeah,
and your wife, and like, I'll be honest, they don't want that feedback from me. You know, I try to write my wife a performance review or tell her that, you know, we're going to sit down for your first quarter review. That's not going to fly. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like I've lost my ability to interact with other adults at this point.
And what about gained?
That's a really good question. And to be perfectly honest, I maybe perspective to a certain degree. And I know that could be a pretty broad answer, but, you know, I always was able to handle everything. Even when things went bad, you know, they never went as bad as they could go. And, you know, I had one of those beliefs almost too, that like sometimes when you're a kid, you think maybe I'm the only person in the world and everyone else is just in my mind and like they're, you know, like I'm real, but they're not, like, you know, that kind of sense of self-importance. And going through kind of an experience like this, I think really does force you to think about yourself and who you are and realize that you're not good at a lot of things and there are things you can improve. And you know what, like you deserved it maybe. And I know it sounds really harsh, but that's going to be helpful, I think, because knowing how to fail and then dealing with failure, you know, you have to get it, you have to have it. And I got it now.
Gotcha. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we've asked the question a few other times, and well, I said fashion, but perspective as well, I mean, I lost fashion, didn't gain, but perspective.
Yeah, I assumed.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing you said there about learning how to fail and what to do next. I think, you know, we say it in this episode, pivot. I don't think so much it's like a pivot. It's really like getting knocked out. You know, you just get punched and you're fighting so hard and you're just like flat on your back. It's really about like literally getting up again and saying, what is this new direction and thing that I'm going to do? It's really, you know what I mean? I think that pivot word is so annoying because it's not.
That's why I used it
this way. No,
that's why I used it because everybody hates the word. And it was literally one of the go-to words when the pandemic started. How will your brand pivot? How will you pivot?
Right, but like what will you learn from failure is really a great lesson and great question to ask yourself. And what are you going to do now? How are you going to learn from what happened? You know,
yep. I mean, how do you make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
And if it does happen again, how do you make sure that the results are still better?
You know,
you're always going to fail.
It's like restaurants, these small restaurants you'd see like in Queens and Brooklyn. And you're always like, how do they stay afloat?
I always assumed those were fronts for the mob or something, or child trafficking or something like that. We've got one on our corner, a French restaurant that, you know, and I'm not a huge fan of French food. It's again for another time, but
ironic.
I've never seen anybody in it, and it's a prime real estate. It's been four years. What the hell is going on? They're clearly running drugs, running guns.
Right. But they're still here, and that's the point.
And they have jobs, so
yes, so good for them.
And they don't pay taxes. So you either have to be in the 1% or
find a growth industry. Child trafficking.
No, do not joke about child trafficking. Drugs.
Drug smuggling.
Smuggling. Though, yeah.
These are
tax shelter. Yeah,
these are useful skills in a pandemic world.
Ironically, also being done by the 1%. So, you know.
Yeah. It's like reverse Walking Dead right now.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. It's not the one. Anyway, go ahead.
No. Well, I feel like, you know, we've covered a lot of territory. It's been almost an hour. So if you have any last words of wisdom, Evan.
I have absolutely no words of wisdom. Yeah, wear pants. Don't start. Just don't start. It starts with one pair, and then, you know, your wife and family goes, why are you sitting around in jeans? Like, come on, get comfortable. No. And so you fall into it, and before you know it, you're just
It starts with the
drawstring,
and then it goes to the zipper, and the next thing you know, you're wearing a belt again. Like, just stop the madness.
It's a gateway drug. It's like marijuana to heroin pants to sloth.
I mean, but it does give you like an idea of like, do pants matter? Like, why can't I just come in here and do my job in sweatpants if I'm doing the job? Why do you care what pants I'm wearing? Let me do the job.
I just do, you know, for some, when there's certain outfits that you could put on where I don't think you feel professional. Right. I don't think it gives you that kind of positive reinforcement. You're like, if I dress like a clown to go to work, you know, I have a feeling that regardless of how good my costume was and how good a job I did, that I probably wouldn't feel as good about myself.
I'll give you
because
that.
I'm a clown. So dressing like all, you know, like a 40-year-old, you know, yoga mom, which is not what I am, is demoralizing.
So get dressed. Feel better about yourself. Put on a suit. Well, sit at your desk in a tie.
Yes. So the next goal is to get suits I can fit into again.
Get on the bike
and then
get back on the bike.
And then we'll get on the bike and then we'll
forget about suits. The chair I'm sitting here broke over the course of COVID because I've been in it so much. No. I'm just trying to get things situated in the right place.
All right, we're going off the rails here. So
as it usually happens.
Evan, this has been really awesome and really enlightening, and we appreciate your honesty and candor. So thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Yes, and for reiterating that I was an awesome employee.
You were a great employee. I really enjoyed working with you, Brianna.
Thank you, Evan.
I would recommend you to almost anybody.
No, you should say I would hire you without a resume any day of the week.
Evan, get a job so you can
I want to see the $2,000 resume. Sorry, if you spent $2,000 on a resume, I want to see it.
That better be some nice paper, Brianna.
All right, I didn't spend $2,000.
Get your money's worth.
I didn't spend $2,000, but it also includes a lot of other things, I promise. So.
Okay, I kind of liked it. Maybe after this, you could send it to me. I'd kind of like to see
I haven't,
it, actually.
I'm in the process of we're in the process right now. It's not finished.
Good luck.
Anyway, with you can still check out Michelle and Augustine products and jobsblowpodcast.com at jobsblowpodcast. Check us out. Review, like, subscribe, tell your friends. Look out for Evan. You don't know where he's going to land. He could be turning the new brand around sometime soon. And just check the Indeed sites for Brianna's new resume. It'll be out soon. we're just so glad. Thanks so much for everybody listening. And Brianna, you got anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you again, Evan. And this whole thing went off the rails. I can't even think straight right now.
I'm not surprised. I wasn't expecting rails to begin with.
All right. Well, thank you again. And did you say follow us at Jobs Blow Podcast on Instagram?
All right, guys. I think so. Jobs Blow Podcast. Brianna's so active on it right now. The 2000 is not going towards that. So just go check out what she's doing on there because she is rocking and rolling on there. At Jobs Blow Podcast. Give us suggestions too if you have any guest ideas. I'm Mr. Josh Hyman online everywhere. Peace out, everyone.
C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. Yeah, C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. C is for cookie, that's good enough for me. Oh, cookie, 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 start with C. Yeah! Cookie, 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 start with C. Oh, boy!